I'm Steve Gilman, and this is Brand Story, where we help you build stronger, more sustainable brands by sharing insightful conversations with brand leaders, marketers, and professional storytellers. Today, my guest is David Fisher.
You got to know what you're trying to do. You got to know how to do it. And then you put the right tools in place. But tools are just, they're a force multiplier, right? Like literally, that's what tools are. So if you're doing the wrong stuff, tools just help you do the wrong stuff faster.
David is the best-selling author of several books, including Networking in the 21st Century, Hyper-Connected Selling, and Networking in the 21st Century on LinkedIn. In addition to being an author, he is a keynote speaker, a coach, and an important voice in both sales and marketing. Hey, David, welcome to Brand Story.
Thank you. You must be in marketing because apparently I know everything about sales. Great. That's
you do.
That's good branding. Now, I don't know if I could follow through on that.
Yeah, but,
sounds good.
Let's just say you know more than most. You know, maybe from the school of hard knocks. I don't know.
I've made my fair share of mistakes and I've learned from a few of them.
I think that's where we do learn, you know, it's just from getting things wrong and moving forward. You've been in sales. You know, I follow you on LinkedIn and you and I have known each other for a while now and you were on the podcast before. So it's great to have you back. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
One of the things that I think is so cool that I'm not sure we got into much in the episode last time that I think is really fascinating. I love that you still talk about it. Is that your first sales job was like knives, and I think it was door-to-door.
Yeah, well, so technically not door-to-door, so I always want to make sure I'm clear. We only worked by appointments, but it was direct in-home sales and selling Cutco knives.
That is a tough gig.
It was, it was an interesting gig.
Yeah.
for sure, but yeah, I was it was between my junior and senior year in college, and I was down trying to pay my way through school, and it's my first year living on my own. And, you know, so that rent check, you need to get paid every month. And I remember, and, you know, I was kind of always a kid who, you know, would always have two or three jobs, like all through high school and college, you know, I was that kid. But I remember sitting in an interview and going, wait, if I sell more, like, you'll pay me more, right? So like my results actually have an impact. And if you really think about it, for a lot of us, when we start those first high school jobs or college jobs, it's minimum wage or, you know, you get excited about waiting tables or bartending because you might be able to hustle some extra cash. But no, that was my first exposure to getting paid for your results. And so was very successful as one of their top salespeople and ran the Chicago office for 5 years. And all that was great, but it really was just, there's very few opportunities for young people to get legit. And I would almost kind of say like the street ball of sales, direct in-home sales comes out of that tradition of door-to-door.
Yeah, and also just being able to just talk to people who are strangers, ask questions, form quick relationships, find out if what you have is going to solve their problem. I bet you learned a lot doing that.
Oh, it was a real world MBA for sure, both as a seller and then as I said running an office for them. And I think that's exactly it is, as I've gone on through my career and had an opportunity to work with individuals and companies, big and small, all kinds of industries. And I don't care how many zeros are on the contract. In the end, it's just you talking to somebody trying to convince them to do something, right?
Yeah, and actually trying to connect with them and see if you solve their problem. I can relate because I've been an entrepreneur since I was 14. And the first company I started was kind of like primitive Postmates because, what I did is figured out a way to get Krispy Kreme donuts wholesale. And then I set up a door-to-door donut delivery route. So mine was knocking on doors and asking people if they wanted fresh donuts and then hiring kids, you know, those wire grocery carts. I had kids pulling them behind bikes, delivering hot donuts at 6 a.m.
You know, hey, that's not even a sales job. You're not selling, you're just offering.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who doesn't want that?
Right, there's not a hard sell. It's just you want one or two dozen, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, product is important. So when you have a good product, you're way ahead of the game. You know, if your product stinks, it makes it way harder to sell.
Don't we forget that? I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, marketing, selling, branding, whatever, there was this idea that you can put lipstick on a pig, right?
Yeah.
And it's so funny when people ask me about what they should look for if they're going to go into a sales role. I'm like, is the product good? Right? I mean, yes, I always laugh that I got my start selling knives. I've still got my set in the kitchen. They're that good. And I think that a lot of times we just think, oh, with the right sales process or the right marketing campaign, you can sell anything. But that's actually not the case. right? The market will only bear so many inferior products for so long until it says no thanks.
I agree. And then, you know, being a salesperson who gets compensated for their results when you're trying to sell a bad product, you're just setting yourself up for a world of hurt, which is probably why I picked hot donuts, because really, who doesn't want that?
You weren't walking around at 6 a.m. trying to sell spinach.
You're right. Or exercise. Very difficult sale. So I think that's really interesting, because I really do think, I almost wish that people that were in sales or in marketing, it's so related, you know, and I'm a brand marketer, and I know you spend a lot of time in, you know, really high stakes sales and sales that are of all kinds of different products over your, you know, career, but they're very related. You're either trying to create relationship and want make someone prefer or want something, or you're directly trying them to get them to buy it. So they're, it's always related. But I feel like if we could create a school where someone had to go in home, and if they want to be a successful salesperson, and try to do like by appointment in home sales or primitive door to door donuts, it would do them a lot of good.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think we're actually, to take this even more broadly right now, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about technology and AI, all this stuff that's happening right now. In the end, the sellers that are going to be successful are the ones that can connect as a human being, right? Like I learned as a 20-year-old kid, all right, I got Mr. and Mrs. Jones sitting across from me. To your point, I've got minutes, not to become best friends with them, but to build, you know, the know, like, and trust, right? That old school sales adage. All things being equal, we do business with those we know, like, and trust. And human beings, I remember, I forget where I first encountered this idea, but human beings were wired for connecting, right? We have these huge brains, not to do differential equations, but to navigate human relationships. And so when you think about that, you're like, oh, that's why when we're in this sales conversation, there are so many things that are happening consciously and unconsciously. If I can start tapping into a lot of that consciously, I'm going to be more successful. And that is what I kind of learned. And hopefully to sometimes successfully, sometimes not, I still bring that into the work I do today.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And you had a post, it may have been today, man, or yesterday, where you talked about like mindset, skill set, tool set.
Oh, yeah.
Which kind of...
I think it was today.
Was that today?
That one comes back a lot.
Yeah, it comes back a lot. It's a theme that comes back a lot, you know, and you and I have gone back and forth about AI and automation and sort of how technology has inserted itself into every single process. But it's kind of a reflection of what you just said. The more people try to take humanity out of the process, the more you learn it's the only thing that works.
Right. Well, it's the only thing that's a differentiator.
Yeah, right. Good point.
I think to the point you just made, I posted recently on LinkedIn about the idea of mindset, skill set, and tool set. And that's just always a philosophy I've had. I'm not the originator of it. I know a lot of my colleagues have this as well. But you got to know what you're trying to do. You got to know how to do it. And then you put the right tools in place. But tools are just, they're a force multiplier, right? Like literally, that's what tools are. What's a lever? What's a pulley? So if you're doing the wrong stuff, tools just help you do the wrong stuff faster, right? And I've got enough gray hairs that are well earned to remember selling before the internet. And everyone's like, oh, email is going to change things. The web's going to change things. And it has, right? I mean, the fact that we can just, you know, go to our phones and get any piece of information about a prospect, for example, LinkedIn, holy cow.
Yeah.
But the fact that that was going to be the silver bullet that allows you to sell or to market.
Yep.
There'd be a lot more successful sellers right now if that was the case. Right, because we all have the internet now. We've had it for a couple decades. You know, what's happened? What's going on?
I do think that's really interesting, because all the technological advances, whether it's the internet or email or being able to do this or that, and especially AI right now, there's always this thing that it's going to change everything. And, you know, you won't need as many people or need as many humans. I'm not sure. I hear that a lot about AI. I think jury's out on how many people it puts out of work. You know, because if you are in a role that's very call center-ish or you know, fairly simple, I think those could be under threat. But I think if there's a human skill to it, it's pretty hard to replace.
Yeah, I think you point out something really important there. Is there a human element that can actually be replaced? And the problem we're in right now, I feel, and this happens with most new tech cycles, is there's just so much hype. It's hard to kind of winnow. Like, AI is going to be very transformative in a lot of ways, in a lot of industries, right? There's so many cool things that can be done. You know, I'm looking forward to some of the medical advances that it's going to promise. Having ChatGPT do your sales outreach emails for you, I always just say, who cares who's writing the email if nobody's reading the email, right? Like the reason I don't read cold outreach is not because it's not written well. It's because it's usually not pertinent. Okay. It's always not pertinent, right? I'm not looking for it. That's just not how you're going to get to me personally. I know some other people do respond to cold outreach, but you know, it's hard to kind of winnow the chaff from the wheat, so to speak, right now. I also thought it was really interesting. Somebody made the point that if the job can be automated by AI, it should probably just be eliminated, not automated.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of jobs that just kind of are making people do work that should be done by a bot, because let's free that person to do something that's meaningful as opposed to drudgery.
I kind of feel like things turn, you know. I think companies will attempt, and they are, some have done it for years and some are just using AI to be better at being bad at things. And the things that they're bad at is we want to talk to a person. And if you keep making it harder and harder for us to talk to a person, we're going to like your brand less and less. So then the reaction to that in the market will likely be, you can talk to a real person with us. You know, that becomes a differentiator. That becomes something that you can get with company A versus company B. When everyone tries to cut out people, it's going to be people that make you want to work with this company versus that company.
That becomes a differentiator.
Yeah. So I think that that's where this will all end up. You know, you and I have joked, I think, on LinkedIn about that you should sometimes write, this post was written by an actual human being, you know? It's like a differentiator, right? Now. Yeah, I wrote this myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of our opportunities is to really start to leverage. And the problem is, when we say leverage our humanity, that often gets so vague. Like, what does that mean?
Right.
But one thing, I remember having a conversation with another, one of my favorite Steves on LinkedIn, Steve Watt, and we were talking about point of view, right? And the idea that point of view can't be outsourced. And so I do think, even in getting very practical, what does leveraging your humanity today mean? It's going out as a marketer, as a salesperson, as an entrepreneur, and having that point of view, that perspective. And it doesn't have to be controversial or loud or anything, but it has to be unique to you, right? I mean, I started selling knives as a 20-year-old kid. That has colored my profession. We were talking about it, right? I played in a band for a long time. I managed the band. I ran my own business for a long time. That is part of my unique perspective and that I bring to me right now. Somebody else could be just as successful doing what I'm doing, but they'd have a different point of view. And I think that if we want to cut through the clutter, that becomes so important.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, I think you and I talked about this last time we talked, but I talked to Steve Watt about this. He was on the podcast too. I love Steve Watt. You know, people forget that people buy emotionally. We don't buy because it's even the right product or a good idea, or we usually buy things because we feel that X, Y, or Z. We buy because we feel like it's something that we want, or this thing meets our needs, or I feel like I would like to work with David. Why do I feel like I want to work with David? So maybe there's another guy I could work with, but I still want to work with you. That's going to be because of the mixture of all those things you just talked about. Like, I remember, just from your posts, I remember that you used to sell knives way back when as your first job. You talk about it now and then. You talk about gardening. I know you garden. You know, you talk about, like, I think you go down to St. Thomas or somewhere and do some kind of instruction in the islands.
Oh, boy. You're going to talk, going to the Dominican Republic to teach Zumba.
Yeah. Like, man, when you posted about that, I was like, okay, that's a facet I didn't know about him.
I don't talk about that on my LinkedIn profile. Yeah. But that
is. Yeah. But it was so cool, you know? And I just think that that's what, you know, you start to get, it's like a brand, you know, because I work in brand. That's all your differentiators and all the unique things make up you. So if I need help in what you sell or what you can offer, the story that I tell myself is going to have a lot to do with those things, those personal human things that you do that make you you, you know, that appeal to me for some reason, whatever that reason might be.
Exactly. I learned early on, we buy emotionally, or actually a better way of saying it is we make decisions emotionally, we rationalize after logically. And I learned it selling knives. It's, you know, the amount of knives that I sold because the set would look good in their kitchen.
Right. Yeah.
I used to actually carry the full thing. I actually invested as a brand new rep. I got like the whole beautiful set up. Like I'd show up with like a backpack, another carrying case. Like I was like, I'm moving in. But I realized that if you put it in their kitchen, like, and this sounds, I mean, it's many of your listeners that they're not going to their customers' kitchens, but you'd like put it there and just be like, that looks good. And you'd see people go, yeah, that looks nice.
Yeah. And then it's about the story that they tell themselves about what the knives say about them.
Yeah, exactly. And then you go, hey, let me get you a good deal. And these will last forever and guarantee all the things that do make it a good product. But that's what they tell themselves 2 days later when they're like, why'd I buy those? Oh yeah, that's right. I love to cook.
Yeah. And I got a good deal and he saved me money and he was pleasant and all the things. But I think, you know, whether you're in somebody's home selling something or it's marketing or it's sales, whatever, wherever in the process it is, it's the stories that people can tell themselves about the thing and not what you're hammering them with benefits and proof points that matter. So one of the things that I've noticed, you know, you help people. I think you do. I think you help people be better at networking. Every post you do, if you read anything on LinkedIn, you know, I've followed you on LinkedIn for years now. So anyone listening, go follow David on LinkedIn. We'll have a link to his profile. You're a natural storyteller. So most people who are either good at sales or good at marketing are natural storytellers. You know, they see the world in terms of story. And I think that's one of the cool things you do in your posts, because you don't just tell me like, hey, it's smart to do this or it's good to think of this. What you do is you tell a story. And that story is memorable to me. And then I learn something, but I'm also entertained. And then I get an impression of you and what you care about. So is that something that came naturally, or did it kind of sort of just start to happen as you grew into your career? Were you always like that?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the word naturally. I think like many people who get attracted to sales, you know, I like to talk.
Sure.
To tell those stories. Telling stories is a very nice way of saying, yeah, that guy just won't shut up.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a little more intentional.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, in fact, there's always this idea like, are good salespeople, are they born or made? And, you know, I do think you can have some inclinations or some natural tendencies that will help you along. But I've met people who you would never go, that's a top salesperson, and they just like knock it out of the park because they get this intentionality of doing exactly what you're saying. I'm going to tell a story. I'm going to let them connect with that story. And I think the big thing that I learned as a young salesperson was not to tell the story about me, but to tell the story about them.
Yeah.
Right. And it's hard to do that all the time. I'm still, you know, but we'll use LinkedIn as an example. When I do post, one of the things that I've actually learned this from stand-up comedians of all people. I love watching stand-up comedy to learn the craft. Like you go to the granular because ironically, it's the granular that we all get, right? yes, we all have the same broad emotions, but I was watching Sheng Wang, great stand-up comedy special. I'm actually rewatching it. And at one point he mentions the greasy dust on top of a refrigerator. He goes, that's the forever dust. That's going to be oil one day. And I just found it hilarious because I was like, oh, I know that.
Yeah, we all know that.
We all know that. And so it wasn't like this grandiose statement. Our kitchens can have, he's like, man, I remember. And he was talking about putting a juicer that he used once and never used again up top there. And everybody in that audience was like, I've done that. I've seen that. I'm still practicing that and trying to get better at that. But I think that when you go into the specific, that's where another person goes. Like you said, yeah, I remember having to move my refrigerator one time and I was like, whoa, I got up on the chair. I was like, what is going on? It's
disgusting up here.
And I think that the more you do that, I said, I'm still very much trying to master that. I'm far, far from it. But when you do that, so that's what I try to do in my stories. Like you were talking about gardening. You know, my whole point is like, hey, you guys reading this, you might garden too, or have tried something like this. And the person goes, oh yeah, I remember I had a tomato plant last year. Like that's that point of human connection that I think is also hard to replicate, right? That's not going to be automated.
Yeah. And I think it's like, there's the thing that stand-up comics do is they make us recognize ourselves in little moments and recognize each other. And I think that's what good salespeople do.
Oh, you just said it way better than I could. I love that. That's exactly it.
Yeah, because we go, oh, that's me. I do that all the time. So even when a stand-up comic is being like, you know, pointing out something that's not that pleasant about our human nature, we're like, we laugh at ourselves because like, yeah, sometimes I am selfish or sometimes I am boring or I talk way too much or I do this or I do that. And that's probably why we like it, you know, because it, you know, one of the great things about stand-up comics is we sort of learn about ourselves a little through satire, you know, through humor. And I think that's probably something great salespeople do. It's things that great entertainers or speakers do is, I like how you put it about talking about the granular, you know? Because when you talk to people about big sweeping ideas, I think you lose them. But when you're specific and they can, and it's relatable, you know, that relatability, I think, is so important.
I love what you just said there. So let's even be very specific about, you know, our worlds of sales and marketing. If you're a salesperson going, your company is super inefficient, right? Or, you know, your marketer saying, are you like losing all this money because you're dumb and your processes stink? And blah, blah. Nobody would pay attention to that, right? Just like it's why stand-up comedians are more popular than TED Talks, right? Because nobody wants to just hear somebody come up on stage and be like, you're selfish too much. But in that story, again, if a salesperson go, hey, let me, you know, talk about, you know, this experience I'm having with some of my customers. Here's the feedback I'm getting. I was talking to this one. I can't tell you who it is, but, right, they had this happening and we were able to come in and solve that. Oh, okay. Now, I'm willing to listen, right? Same thing with a marketer, right? I think any good marketing is the one that makes it human, right?
Yeah, where you recognize like, oh, I have problems like that, or that particular thing happened to me, or yeah, that happens to me all the time, or I think that all the time. Because as soon as you find out that someone else has the same problem you do, and it's honest, or someone shares the same frustrations, then you're almost instantly on the same page with them. You know, you want to go on the journey and find the solutions. And I think I also think what's appealing about how stand-up comics do that, or great marketers or salespeople, is the difference between that and a TED Talk, which I'm glad you brought up, is a TED Talk is the point of view of an expert. They know it and they're telling you what it is. The point
and
of view.
I love
of,
TED Talks.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
There's
some
a point.
TED Talks,
There's a place
I'm not bashing
for
them. They're great. But that is a very different, very presentational thing. You know what I mean? And sometimes, yeah, it's amazing. And you're like, oh my God, this person's incredible. Other times it loses you because, you know, they are in some ways talking at you. A stand-up comic or a great salesperson or even a great marketer is in there with you. You know, they're a mess too. You know, they're a little messy too. So sometimes that little bit of messy, you know, like, yeah, you're trying to solve someone's problem, but you had the same problem because, yeah, you just, you know, got a flat tire too and got stuck by the road and had no idea how to change a tire. So a TED Talk, you're not usually admitting a ton of fault or a ton of, vulnerability, where I think in sales or marketing, the more you can really be who you are and just not be perfect, the more rapport it creates.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the right word, rapport. I think of, you know, so you had mentioned networking a moment ago. I often think that a lot of people struggle with networking because they think of it as adversarial, not necessarily meaning they're against other people, but they're thinking of it like, oh, I'm going to go network like with Steve, right? So I'm going to be talking to you. You're going to be talking to me. Hopefully something will come out of that. Versus the idea, like what you just said, it's like with, right? It's almost why when you have, I think of a networking event, a cocktail reception at the end of the conference day or whatever. Like if you can have three people, but even four people. So think about really practically, if there's four of you standing around, all of a sudden you're all next to each other in that circle, right? You're not across, even just three people. But if it's just you and that person, it's very, again, we just kind of think about it as like not butting heads, but we don't relax into it the same way. Apparently this is going to be lessons David learned when he was 20. And Sally, I remember learning this, and I think this was from just a gentleman named Marty Dimitrovich, who was a great, great, great salesman. He was actually running the Midwest when I was a seller. He since passed on. Learned so many lessons from him. One thing he taught, he's like, never sit across from a customer. Like he was just like, you never, because he would like come to the offices sometimes. And I mean, this guy had been in the business for decades. He was amazing. But he's like, you don't sit across, you sit next to. And I was like, oh, okay. And you know, when you're 20, you're like, oh, okay, does it really matter? And then you start doing it and you're like, oh, I get it. In fact, one of the things, and I don't think he taught me this, I think somebody else did. Like if you're ever, and again, this was a very, not how a lot of the sales that, you know, we're involved in these days might be, whereas a one call, what they call it, the one call close. You show up at, you know, in their kitchen, you got an hour, you get in the deal or you're not. If there's a customer who was like into it, but maybe there was like that objection or they're struggling a little bit, like literally pick up your prospectus, go in and either sit next to them or in a chair, pull the chair next to them and go, hey, we're going to figure this out together. I know you really want this. Right. It's an old school like tool. But the reason it works so well is because what you'd see people do is go, oh, okay, we're doing this together. And I mean, even to this day, like I won't sit across. Like if I go have lunch, if we ever have lunch, I'm never sitting across from you. I will always sit kitty corner. Like if there's four tables, like I hate booths for that reason, right? Just let's get next to each other.
That's really interesting because I think I've never thought of that intentionally, like as a strategy, you know, but even in meetings with new business or clients, I never sit across from people. I sort of sit adjacent because I think it feels less, you know, you're on that side, we're on this side. It feels like, okay, can we have a conversation? Can we come together? And I think, you know, it's really interesting because I think there are so much from the sales world that is really positive, but people have such a bad opinion of sales sometimes. But all sales is not manipulation. Do you know what I mean? If you're trying to help someone get something and you're going to use communications tools to bring them along, unless you're trying to force them to do it, I don't think you're coercing anyone into anything. You're just trying to get to a result. And if they ultimately don't want it, they don't want it. But why do you think sales has such a, marketing does too. So, you know, we could, it's the same thing. People either hate marketing or they hate sales because probably they don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, and I think you touched on something there. I mean, we could talk for hours about this, right? I mean, this, now we're talking about sociology and psychology and all these things.
We'll bring it back to networking in a second, but yeah.
Well, it has a huge impact on networking because if you think about networking, is it's selling ourselves.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's, I mean, at its core, that's all networking is, whether that's to get business, whether that's to get that next job. Like I've had friends who I'm like, you want a new job, you need to be networking a lot. Oh, I don't like going out and selling myself. I'm like, that's, if you're not going to sell, you, who is?
Right? Don't wait till you need the job to network.
Yeah, that's a whole nother. Always fix the roof before, while the sun is shining, before it's raining. Anyways, But I do think that one of the biggest reasons why, well, I think there's two reasons. One is you mentioned that these are tools. They are just tools. I talked about that big brain we all have to engage. Human beings are literally wired to connect and engage. And it came from a long, long time ago, and that kept us alive on the savannah. And there's actually some research that shows rejection actually has a negative physical impact. Just the rejection because, and it, I mean, it, we don't want to like overstate it, at least from what I've seen, but it kind of points out that we're wired to avoid that. We're wired to avoid rejection because we want to make sure that our clan, our tribe, whatever still likes us and will take care of us. But because we have this, they're powerful tools, right? So one, I think we're scared about the fact that these are powerful tools, which leads to number two, can be misused and often are, right? And all of us have been hoodwinked. We've all had buyer's remorse. Every single person, you know, the top salesperson is like, oh man, why did I buy that? Or how'd they get? So there's that fear, right? That somebody's going to make us do something that we don't want to. When in the end, nobody made us do anything. Like I actually don't think good sales is about making people do anything. I used the word convince earlier. You're not going to convince somebody to do something they don't want to do. That's not how it works.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes people make bad decisions. Sometimes people get influenced by salespeople who aren't ethical. It doesn't mean that there aren't a ton of ethical salespeople and marketers out there. You know, it's just like you said, any tool that someone can use, they're going to use in a white hat way and they're going to use it in a black hat way. And, you know, part of having those experiences when you get hoodwinked or when someone manipulates you in whether it's a marketing or a sales situation is that you get to learn from it because it's all around us. It's in the media. It's everywhere. Language is powerful. Being persuaded is powerful. I think when you have those experiences, it's like any life experience. It's really good for you to have those experiences because they're coming again later. You know, they'll just keep coming. Something you said that I think is really interesting to take to the world of like networking on LinkedIn or networking period is the idea of sitting beside somebody instead of across from them. Like you just said that a minute ago and it's just turning over in my head right now. Like when I think about your content.
My job here is done. Sorry.
Yeah. And we're out.
Mic drop. Doesn't work as well with a clip on. No, it doesn't. Impressive.
I really like that a lot though, because it's like, you know, when you think about content or being on LinkedIn, the people who I don't want to hear from anymore are the people who are coming at me. You know, they're right across from me. They're either telling me something, but they're not really sharing. They're not really like, you know, sitting next to me, having a conversation, batting some ideas around. So how do you bring that idea into your content? Because I think you do it pretty well.
So I think there's a couple things. Because that is, and thank you for noticing, that is an intentional, right? That is a goal. I think a lot of it stems from the idea of at versus with. Don't talk at people, talk with people. You talk about LinkedIn or regular networking. Nobody wants to be talked at. Nobody goes to, like, if you are in an offline networking group, whether it's a chamber of commerce or a conference, whatever, nobody's like, oh, great, here comes Steve. He just talks about himself constantly. So I'm so glad. And we all know those people. By the way, if you don't know any of those people, you might be it. You might ask for some constructive feedback.
You might be that person.
Yes, exactly. But that's where it really comes from is that, and we think about selling. I did like to talk. Here's a story. I remember, and I was very successful as a salesperson kind of right off the bat. Selling my knives as a 20-year-old kid. I thought I was like all hot stuff. My manager came with me one day and did a little training. He's like, I'll just watch. I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. Let me see how good I am. I didn't sell. And we walked out. He's like, oh, I would have probably sold her the entire set. And of course, I'm like, oh yeah, blah, blah, no, whatever. And he goes, let me tell you all the signals you didn't pay attention to because you were too busy talking and telling. And he literally boom, 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 boom. And I remember that. I was like, all right. But I have found that to be more successful for me professionally. And then especially, you know, in my coaching and training career, even looking very specifically at LinkedIn, people are always like, what should I share? What should I share? And I'm like, well, don't share because you think this is important. Share because you think you can start a conversation. It's very specific to that piece, that LinkedIn piece. It's like, I do think, okay, what can I say that we'll get Steve Gilman to give me like his opinion, and maybe he'll do a comment on LinkedIn. I mean, that's always the grand prize, Steve Gilman, you know. But most people aren't going to. But again, even if I have just had a little drop of the button where she was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. And scrolls. Yeah. Like, that's all we're trying to do on that specific platform, in my opinion. There's a lot of ways of using LinkedIn. There's not one right way. But I think for a lot of us who are trying to cultivate that brand, that reputation, I talk about becoming a sales Sherpa. That was in the hyper-connected selling. This idea of like, how do you position yourself before they become a prospect, before they become a buyer?
I think that happens in different industries for different people. Once you've experienced someone, if you know you can trust them and you know they're going to sit beside you and go through the journey and not take advantage of you, give you good advice, then yeah, that person's going to earn your loyalty. And I think that's what earns all loyalty, is that kind of thing. So, you know, it's interesting because in marketing, I always look at marketing from the point of view of hospitality, you know? So I grew up working in hospitality. I worked in restaurants, fine dining. I worked in really formal restaurants. And there's an element of sales. You're a waiter, like you mentioned, you're working for yourself. But I didn't go out thinking, how many appetizers can I sell to make X amount of dollars? My mindset that some really good mentors taught me is, how can I make sure that people have a great time? How can I help them have a better evening so that they, whatever, how can I make it easier? How can I notice the thing before they notice it? And if you think about marketing or you think about sales as well, when you show up with that intention, like, how can I make this easier on you? How can I help you? Like, literally, it's not about me making the sale. It's about me trying to help. That is like marketing and sales magic, because I think people know the difference, even if they don't know it consciously. They sense it.
Oh, there's so many signals we pick up, right?
Yeah.
And for you know when somebody's just looking at the bottom line. What I think is interesting about this, and I think this often doesn't get said, because I think often there is this mentality of sales as service, sales helping enable that great event, which I think is 100% accurate. I mean, that is actually the approach I have. What often gets left out is, it's okay then to quote unquote sell them, right? It's okay to ask for the business. I mean, I ran my own shop for a long time. I had no problem if you knew that a great evening meant they got that fancy dessert, you're gonna be like, I think you should get this, because everything you're telling me, like, get this, or, you know, hey, why don't you get, you know, the surf and turf tonight? Because that, you just said you're celebrating an amazing evening. That could be part of it. And I think it's the second half of that statement is, if you're going out from a place of service, it actually not only allows you to not sell something they don't need, but to sell them what they do, right? Because I know I've had those conversations where I'm like, I'm not going to sell you this thing that you, the cheap thing, not because it's cheap, but because you're not going to be happy. You don't want it. You don't need it. Everything you've just told me, this is the way forward. Do that. And people then respond. They're like, yeah. Because you also then know as a professional that if you can't help them, and I did this, I'm sure you've had this experience running your own show, you're like, we're not a fit. Can't help you. Let me introduce you to somebody who can.
Yeah, it's not really what we do, or I don't have a solution to that problem. Which I think when people say they can solve something that they can't, that'll get you in a lot of trouble. But I love what you said there, because there's something there about not being neutral, you know? And like, people think that like being neutral, have a neutral waiter and see if you have a good time. Have a neutral salesperson and see if you get what you want. So a good salesperson, a great salesperson, is a guide. And you know, if I show up and I'm going to buy a house, right, which I have done, big purchase. I have a real estate agent. She was great. She was trying to sell me a house, but I knew she was trying to sell me a house, and I wanted her to sell me a house because I wanted a house. Now, if she was neutral about it, she would have had no opinions. But she's got 25 years of experience. So things that I thought I cared about, she would be like, I don't know if you're going to care about that much. Or things I didn't care about, she's like, you know, actually, this is pretty important. So she was far from neutral. You know, and that's what I was taught in fine dining, was like, you got to go out on a limb. These people aren't here for a neutral experience. They're here for a guided experience, you know? So do it well, but be consultative, you know, which means I'm listening mostly and being like, you know, you guys love wine. And we have this one dish that's going to go with the kind of wine you like. And I think you're going to love it. You know, but if I just sat there and was like, I don't know, what do you want?
Yeah. I mean, that's the sales Sherpa experience that I'm talking about. It's like, you've got to be that guide. And you talk about waiters, like I'm actually, and it doesn't happen a lot. I always like when a waiter's like, don't get this.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Right. You know, the, hey, we're known for this. It's super overhyped.
Just, it's not that good.
It's not that good because I've worked in restaurants too. I know your whole menu is not great because I was on this, like, but I, if I'm somewhere where I've never been, I can't know that, but you can. Right. And I like when you ask somebody what's good and they go, well, what do you like? That's always a good question. Right. I'm not going to just blindly recommend stuff, but I like when they're like, well, if you like this kind of dish, probably here, this is tasting really good, you know, right now. Hey, stay away from this. Yeah.
I think it means a lot to us because we're, it's some of that connection you were talking about. Like when someone's willing to go out on a limb, ask us a few questions, listen, and then give a recommendation. We don't have to take it, but I sure appreciate it when it's done, you know? And that sales Sherpa idea is in your book.
Yeah, hyper-connected selling.
Hyper-connected selling. I remember reading your book and seeing that concept and just being like, damn, I love that. So if anyone listening hasn't read David's book, we'll have a link to that too. He has several books. Every single one of them is really good. Yeah, I mean, you're a great writer.
So, I appreciate it.
Yeah, your books are just chock full of
great advice. All me. No AI.
No one.
All me. And my editors, let's be very clear.
Sure. Yeah, that's, they helped.
The editors help a little bit.
Just a little. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've already kept you for longer than I thought that I would and longer than I told you. So I'm going to ask you one final thing because it was something I saw in your content that I think would help anyone listening. I think people, when they're trying to network and they're especially, we'll talk a little bit more about LinkedIn. You know, they have a really hard time commenting and putting themselves out there and like actually interacting with other people. So like giving a like is like some big step, you know? And you talked about the penny trick, which I love because it's so simple, but it's also really sticky. How do you encourage people to actually get out there and sit beside people and offer some content and actually interact and comment?
Yeah, it's a great question. I do think one of the most underused opportunities we have in the digital age is to comment. Just on LinkedIn posts, and it could be another platform if that works for what you're trying to accomplish. But for us in the B2B space, it's definitely LinkedIn. Here's what I would say. It's not always as easy as just commenting. And there's a lot of people in the, you know, the LinkedIn guru world who's like, oh, just comment. Oh, you can have AI do your comments for you. It doesn't matter. I think this is a public forum. Imagine we're at that. I literally think of LinkedIn as the cocktail reception at a conference, right? At the end of the day, we're all just sitting around these little groups and we're starting little conversations around there. And so many of us will be quiet there, right? We might not feel confident or comfortable. So I think the first is to acknowledge that, right? There might be some fear. But it's also recognizing, hey, all you're trying to do is connect with the person. I often suggest, imagine the person who posted just said whatever they posted to you in person, right? They literally are like, hey, I'm really excited about the fact that I was at this conference last week and I learned this. Like, what would you say back to them? On a human-to-human level, not even about what they learned, just, oh, that's really exciting. It looks like you had a great event. Or it might be to the content that they shared. Hey, that's a really great idea. It could be, here's an experience that I've had that you just thought of. Or it could be, and you've seen me do this, I think, a lot. Hey, this is really interesting. Steve, what do you think, right? And I'll bring some of the people who I know are in that world. Think of it as a conversation, right? And I would also say, and I don't know the percentage, I would say probably at least 30% of my comments are not focused on the content. They are based on the individual who posts, right? And that could mean it's just a joke, an inside joke that I know that person, or right, I'm not trying to have every comment be weighty and valuable.
And substantive, right? Yeah.
That's great. And there's a time and place for that.
Yeah, sometimes.
If you transcribed most of your conversations with other human beings, most of it is not valuable and weighty and substantive. It's, oh, that sounds interesting. Or, hey, what about this? Ask a question. But yeah, that's I think the way in. And even just doing two or three of those every day, build up that habit.
Yeah. I think that's such good advice. And I think showing up and thinking of it as a conversation, sometimes, you know, you don't have a lot to say, but what's wrong with offering a little support? You know, not going to cost you anything. It's a nice thing to do. Sometimes there's something in a thought that really gets you and you want to expand and you want to talk about it more, but it doesn't mean if you don't have that, you can't just show up and be supportive, you know? And sometimes it's just nice to be encouraging for other people.
Unless you're one of those, again, let's use LinkedIn. LinkedIn power users, and you're always on, you got 50,000 people in your network. Unless you're that person, it took you a little bit of energy, commitment, bravery to post, to put yourself out there in a public forum. So to what you just said, even if you're just going to that person saying, hey, I see you, I validate that. I mean, it sounds a little hokey, but human beings are a little hokey, right? That can be just so powerful. Hey, Steve, that's great. This, I've seen you do this. I know I've done this, where somebody just shares something that might not be completely, you know, aligned with their professional world. Maybe it's just, hey, I had this experience, or it was a beautiful morning today. I want to share this picture. And you just, hey, thanks. Right. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Thanks for offering that, or good for you, or anything. You know, if you honestly mean it, you know, if you don't have a bot do it or AI do it, I think you're probably in good shape. Thank you so much for coming back on. And, you know, I encourage anyone listening to please check out David's books. His books are amazing. If you follow him on LinkedIn, you will thank yourself, because everything he offers, I think, creates conversation. And I think you're a great example of someone to follow and learn from. I've learned a lot from you by following.
And I from you.
So. Yeah, it's a blast. All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for being here, David. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Want to hear more inspiring stories? Subscribe on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what we're doing, please rate, review, and share. It's the best way to support us. Thank you for listening to Brand Story.